What's up, everybody? We are the Let's Talk Divots podcast coming at you. We are people that walk inside the ropes on the LPGA Tour, bringing you access, bringing you players, caddies, representatives, and just trying to probe, get inside the minds of the best people around golf in the female game. You can find us on all social media platforms. We are at Let's Talk Divots with all our handles. And go ahead, don't hesitate to fire us an email, drop us any feedback, maybe make a suggestion of somebody you'd like us to try to track down, and we'll go ahead and do that. You can email us at letstalkdivots@gmail.com. And we appreciate your feedback. We really want to hear from you. Go ahead, get in there. Do it. What are you waiting for? We had a really, really fun episode this time. The first caddy by himself on, we had Andy Techmeyer. Andy's been out there for 12 years. He's been on tour caddying, and he's also a life coach on the side. So he dabbles, but he has a business and really tackles the mental side of people and helps his players in that aspect as well. And we got into some really, really deep stuff, especially towards the end of the cast, and just some really good insightful things for people in everyday life, helping them transcend fear and goal setting and things like that. So really valuable. We had a great time talking to Andy, and we really just hope you enjoy this pod. So sit back and enjoy this episode of Let's Talk Divots. What's going on, Ronnie? What's happening in SoCal, brother?
Oh, you know, same old, same old. COVID's got us by the balls, and we're just kind of hanging on by a thread. Saw a little golf this week. KLPGA had a tournament going on. Not much there of interest. And the big boys were playing a little bit. Not much interest there. It lasted 9 holes. It was rather boring, other than listening to Jerry Fouts out there, our LPGA man on the course. So that was kind of cool. But it's all about the same.
Ronnie's a big fan of old Jerry there, who we had on the pod a couple weeks ago. And I'm really stoked because this is our first, we've had some caddy, we had a caddy player duo last week, but this is the first time we've got to showcase an LPGA caddy other than myself, which I don't know if I can actually be fully classified with the amount of events that I've got under the belt. But let's welcome to the show Andy Techmeyer. Andy, what's going on, brother?
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
Yeah, where are you at, Andy? What's going on? Arizona?
Yeah, out in Mesa, Arizona. Our golf courses are still open. I was doing a little bit of caddying at Paradise Valley Country Club around January, February, but as soon as this thing hit, I think the members are still out there playing, but there's caddies are not out there. So I'm just at home, just, waiting for the tour to pick up. Like Ronnie said, caught word of that KLPGA event. That's really interesting that they were wearing masks and no crowds allowed. So,
oh yeah, they had thermal testing going on. As soon as a lady walked through the front gate, the thermal testing went on. If they read their temperature, then they gave them a little sticker to put on their hat saying that they've been okayed and they can wander the course. And yeah, it was pretty sparse as far as any fans or players or managers, any coaches out there, nothing. So it was interesting.
Yeah, I saw the caddies had to wear the mask. The players obviously didn't, but no coverage on that at all on TV. Fair enough. But I guess Lee Six would have been the highest from the tour of the official world golf ranking. She finished T15, 9 under. Sea Young Kim T46, and Sung Hyung Park missed the cut, but they're playing golf over there, so pretty cool.
I'm sure our big guys were looking in on it and trying to find out what we can do to, better what they had going, but at least they were out there trying it.
And speaking of big guys, golf's back on TV for the men, but a little bit of a blow up in the women's game as far as the Twitter sphere was concerned. Did you guys have a chance to check out Mel Reed's tweet at all?
I did.
Yeah. What's your thoughts there, Andy? We'd love to get a caddy, probably, you know Mel a little bit, I'm sure, over the years. And love your thoughts. Just for the listeners, I get Mel tweeted, "Is golf really back?" Today's charity event should showcase golf, not just men's golf. What an opportunity golf has let slip once again to represent equality, et cetera. I'm paraphrasing there. I probably got it wrong, but.
Yeah, right. And it's interesting because like on Twitter and then seeing what's interesting is like, obviously knowing Mel, if Caddy on Tour being in her group, she's outspoken. She's very strong player. A good player, but very like clear. Like she knows, not afraid to express her opinions, obviously. And I love that because, and you know, what's interesting though is as a caddy, you know, people ask us that all the time, right? They talk about the pay gap. They talk about the difference between the men's and the women's game. And I know that that's something that the players, and I know that's something that LPGA is trying to do, is trying to work with the PGA Tour because they both have really great products. Like it's not the women's game and men's game's a little bit different, but it's still great to watch it no matter what it is. So I think it's really great that she said that because if you don't call people out, then there's no opportunity to do something. And I don't disagree with her. Like how she went about it, I don't know if that was the best way, but.
I mean, how else do you get your opinion out there other than the Twitter sphere, you know? So, but yeah, it was definitely, I mean, I'm with you, outspoken, but whatever, man, hit the bull by the horn. She seems to be pretty brassy. I don't know her, but you know, I've followed her for, you know, a long time now. And like you said, it's just like, how else do you get that talk out there? I mean, the pay equality, I don't really think will ever happen, but at least like the gap can narrow a little bit. And, you know, they could have been out there playing with each other, the women and the men. But, you know, maybe that's between the LPGA and the PGA. They need to find some way to work together or, you know, I don't know. We're not sitting in those back rooms. But interesting conversation anyway, and it blew the hell up.
Yeah, I think it would have been a great idea to have the girls out there in a foursome, the guys out there in a foursome playing skin games just to showcase. I agree with what Mel said. You know, the girls don't get their due right out there. And equal pay, equal play, you know, I don't know. We don't get the fan support, the LPGA. We don't have the sponsors, the deep pockets. We don't get the television revenue. But it should be a fair field out there. And the women deserve just as equal time share as the television. I wish the LPGA would have jumped on it before the PGA jumped on it and gave them, then we would have got a bigger share of the market, people watching it. But Mel is outspoken, and I believe what she said. I agree with it, and I'd love to see a girls' event coming up here real soon.
What do you think, Andy? Why don't you give us your background here, brother? Let's jump into you a little bit. You've been caddying 12 years, from what I understand. We only met briefly in Wisconsin. I think we walked 9 holes, or maybe we walked the whole 18, but you know, we had some good conversation out there, and we've been in a bit of contact ever since. So I give the listeners, we want to dive into you. We want to dive into the 12-year caddy veteran. I want to pick your brain so I can get better.
Yeah, awesome. Go for it. I love that. But before we jump into that, back in 2006 was my first full season. I'm originally from Minnesota, lived in Arizona for 20 years now, and I was working at a golf course in South Phoenix and worked with Lynn Marriott and Pia Nilsson of Vision 54. Were on the back of the driving range of the course we worked at, and I had an opportunity to check out what they were up to, and I started working for them, and that's how I met a bunch of tour players. And so I had a background of club caddying when I was a kid, was playing, you know, some mini tour events around the valley, was aspiring, you know, loved golf. And they were like, hey, you know, while we're gone in the summer and we're not doing our thing in the 115 degree heat of Phoenix, do you want to go caddy on the tour? And I thought, cool, that'd be cool. Like, and at the time they were working with a player from Finland named Mini Blomqvist, who's the first player, male or female, to ever shoot 62 in a major championship. Before I started caddying for her. And one thing led to another. I caddied for her at Q School. She shot lights out, got her card, and was like, hey, you want to go on tour with me? And I thought, all right, let's do it. And that was, like I said, back in 2006, and then just been figuring it out from there.
Have you only been on the ladies tour? Did you ever do the men's?
I caddied I caddied 1 week on the PGA Tour for Mike Weir last spring. Really?
Yeah. Come on. Yeah. You're tearing at my heartstrings here. I love it. So go into detail about that story. I'd love to hear about that.
Yeah. So again, right, it's all about who you know. And when I met Lynn and Pia, that was huge. For those that don't know, Pia Nilsson was Annika's coach, the national team coach, as Annika was coming up in Sweden. And so Mike Weir had been working with them for a while, and he got a sponsor's invite like a week or two before the event. And I'm sitting in my living room and I get a text message from Pia that says, "Hey, are you available to caddy next week?" And in the back of my mind, right, if you caddy, it's like, well, who am I caddying for? Because I don't just want to caddy for anybody. And then I'm like, well, who is it? And she's like, Mike Weir. And I'm like, you got to be shitting me. Mike Weir.
Which event was this story, Andy?
It was called the Career Builders. Like, it's the old Bob Hope tournament in Palm Desert. So I was like, yeah, I'm available. And they said, all right, well, we're working with Mike, you know, come on out to Talking Stick and you'll meet him and do some stuff on the course and figure out what he's up to. And it was just kind of a 1 week deal, but it was so cool. It's so cool to work for, you know, a world renowned player. Somebody at the height of his career was number three in the world back when he won the Masters.
Yeah, I just listened to a great podcast with him on the No Laying Up. And, you know, obviously as a Canadian, that was something that we rode really hard, having a Masters champion. You know, the only other guy we had growing up was Stephen Ames, who was really doing anything. And he was, you know, we inherited him from Trinidad and Tobago. And I once sculled a lob wedge into Stephen Ames' arms. That's a whole nother story that we'll get into another day. Left a big bruise, but that's so cool. What year was that? And what are maybe some of the differences of caddying on the men's, and I know it was only 1 week, but you know, with your experience on the women's tour, just maybe some differences and just go into that, please.
Yeah. So it was last year. It was spring of 2019, and that I worked for Mike. And the main difference, and it's so funny, right? Because like when I first started caddying for women, I had no idea about like communication and emotion, like all that stuff, and just not knowing how to navigate that. And then all of a sudden you're on the men's tour and men just tell you, like, if they want you to do something, they tell you quickly and sharply. You know, we're on the first tee on Thursday, and there was a woman standing outside the ropes, and she had her phone out and was taking a picture of him, and he was pissed. And he's like, "Put your phone away." And she didn't even understand how agitated he was. And then he looked at me and he's like, "That's your job. You got to make sure that get the volunteers to do this and that." And I was like, wow, this is a lot different. Girls, most of the women that I've caddied for, they're just like, "Hey, can you get me a bottle of water?"
So this was just 2019. This is just last year. So you've been out there quite a bit. You're already pretty much a seasoned veteran caddy. And were you nervous at all going to the men's?
That's a great question. With the background, I felt comfortable to be out there. And then once I got past that first hole and realized that I hadn't done enough homework, like being a veteran caddy, I knew that you need to ask a lot of questions pre-tournament to get to know a player and to find out what rubs them the wrong way. Because there's something that does. Because if there isn't anything that rubs them the wrong way, they're Tiger Woods, right? So as soon as we're on the first tee and he gets upset and he's saying this and that, I was like, okay, I need to get my shit together. And I did. And the whole week, you know, the week worked out all right. He didn't make the cut. He didn't putt very well that week.
Did you have a practice round with them before the Thursday start?
We did. We actually had a couple. The problem, and this is what I allowed to get in my way, was that because it was the Bob Hope, they now, I don't know how it was back in the day, but they play that on three different golf courses and they give people carts for the practice rounds. So it just didn't have that same rhythm of carrying the bag. Not to mention he's lefty, right? So I had to put the bag down on the opposite side of the ball, which I'm not accustomed to at all. It was a lot of little things that I had to figure out, like the first three holes of the first day. But the veteran experience helped a lot. I was able to land on my feet and get it sorted. And at the end of the first day, he still said, "You did a good job. You know, thanks a lot. It, you know, we got off to a rocky start, but it was all right." And then by the end of the week, he was said I did a good job and talked about potential.
Paid you.
Exactly. I got a check, so.
Were you working in yards or meters?
I'm working in yards, thank goodness.
Oh, come on, us Canadians, we work in yards, man. Well, I don't work in yards anymore, but yeah, no, we're yards up here, even though we're on the metric system.
Who were you paired with?
We were paired with another guy from Canada. And it was only twosomes because it was, we played with amateurs. I can't remember his name. I don't know the guys very well nowadays.
So yeah, I know the tournament in I actually caddied the amateur event. Is it the one with all the amateurs in the Palm Desert there? Like the New American Express or whatever?
Where the amateurs play with the pros. And that was another whole thing. Like I had never done that on tour. I'd never played in a pro-am event.
All the way till Saturday too. Like it's super strange. Yeah. Yeah. And the pros are in carts and practice rounds. And yeah, that was a first for me. I was like, what the hell's going on here? So I know exactly what you're talking about there.
Yeah. Still a great experience. And his wedge game was phenomenal.
Oh man, yeah, he's tidy. That's arguably what won him the Masters, that and a really good putter. As 12 years on tour with the women, what was there ever any inclination of ever wanting to step up into like the men's game, or like what's as a veteran caddy, like what goes through a caddy's head in that regard? Is it something, or you know, is it just like that tough to get out there, or you know, just like happy being out on the women, working with the women? Just any thoughts there, Andy?
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit different, like because I came from the whole golf school perspective and I was working with coaches and have a heart for coaching. Like coaching is what I love about caddying. I love being inside the ropes, but it's making that key difference. So I was pretty happy on the ladies tour. I get asked that question a lot, right? People usually say, oh, you caddy on the ladies. How come you don't caddy on the men's? It's two different networks of people, right? So you work the LPGA, you're going to meet those caddies, those players. You may have a couple of contacts on the men's tour, but you're also going to, and this is kind of interesting because it goes back to the like men and women's inequality. There's even, I've heard some stories from other LPGA caddies too, of like they've caddied on the ladies tour and then they go to the men's tour and they make a subtle mistake and they get razzed a little bit. Like, oh, this isn't the ladies tour, you know? But it's, you can break in. And I know guys that have caddied on both. It's just a matter of like, you got to be really clear that that's what you want to do and then go make it happen. But you're not going to meet the right people to caddy on the men's tour, on the ladies tour, and vice versa. I mean, I think it's easier to go from PGA to LPGA because with that PGA resume and credential, people just automatically assume you must be a phenomenal caddy if you've caddied on the PGA Tour. But that's also not necessarily true because caddying is a lot about how well you mesh with your player. So
caddying and communication, super important.
Caddying is primarily, it's mental and it's communication, right? Like as a caddy, you need to have a basic understanding of how to play the game correctly, fundamentally, like understand the statistics of where you want to be. That's advantageous and you know, in a bad spot, right?
But then I guess go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, then the other aspect is about this attitude, and whether you're a man or a woman, if you don't have a good attitude, you're not going to perform well, and it's just different. Like it's the difference between hanging out with your buddies versus hanging out with your girlfriend or your wife. And so the way you communicate with men and the way you're going to help them, you're still going to help them. But I would say it's a lot more, as a caddy has a lot more to do with your ability to have a good mindset and make sure that you can keep your player in a good attitude state. Cause they're so good, right? Like, I mean, and then two ladies tour, same thing. But you might have to do a little bit more to talk to them and to, women's depth of emotion and the different things they can think about and the different things they talk about, your ability as a caddy may have to be a little bit more adept to allowing different types of conversations. Like guys, you know, when you're on the course with guys, you're talking about cars and sports and women. And when you're caddying with women, they can literally talk about anything. Like they may talk about their cat, they may talk about their girlfriend, they may talk about their family. Like, you know, and this is what makes women great. It's, you know, we love this depth of emotion and being with them. And when it's your job to help them perform, it's a different set of tools you need to be able to do that. So.
And if you don't mind mentioning, who are some of the players you've caddied for on the ladies tour?
Yeah. I would say the most notable one is Anna Nordqvist. I worked for her for 2 weeks back in 2011. I worked for Candy Kung, Minnie Blomquist, as I mentioned earlier, Ari Song, Katie Future used to play on tour. Most recently, Maria Ho Uribe, worked with her on and off for 5 years. Brianna Doe.
Did you have anybody you had for a few years where you consistently came back and traveled the world with?
Yeah, Maria Ho, Minnie Blomquist early on in the career, we had a couple like on again, off again. Like we were on again, off again over the course of 3 years. And then with Uribe, Maria Ho, I worked for her for 3 years and then I left and then I came back and then we worked again for another two years, something like that. So.
And what is on again, off again, and why does it work like that? Like, you guys just, you know, any good relationship, sometimes you just need a break or what?
So this is why I'm passionate about coaching. It was those first 3 years of the on again, off again that I couldn't have answered that question, Casey. I was like a guy trying to date a woman and she would get frustrated and fire me. And then a month later, she'd call me up and say, "No, I think you're a really great caddy. You know, would you come back and caddy for me?" And she was the best. Minnie Blomquist, still to this day, best putter I've ever seen in the world. So we'd ride these cycles out and through these cycles and through my own confusion and frustration and stumbling upon some personal development stuff off the course that had me go, okay, I think I got it now. I think I understand. And then what's interesting is right after that happened, that's when I met Mary Ajo and we got off and running, you know. I was able to find out like what the breakdowns were in communication and how to upsets are going to happen in a day in a tournament, especially over the course of like working with somebody for a year. So it's really like relationship skills. Like you have to be able to like come back to the table and honor what's not working about how the team, like take full responsibility as a caddy and say, "Hey, if you're not achieving your goals, that's on me." And so how do we learn from that and then continue to commit to what are we out here to do together and to make sure that we trust each other and all that good stuff.
Did you keep some personal stats like top tens, top fives, any W's?
Yeah. So, with Minnie, she won in Finland, on the European tour, I would say the highlight of my career. Especially for her to win in her home at her home course against her best friend too. And her friend, it came down to the last hole. We had a one shot lead and, the pin was in the back on this long two tier green and her friend hits and it doesn't get to the back of the back tier. So we know, I know she's got like a 60 footer up this ridge and then Minnie hits a hybrid behind the hole, like 15 feet. And I'm like, okay, I'm pretty sure we got this locked up, but they say in match play, right? Like this is kind of a match play situation where you expect your opponent to make. And right before her friend pulled the trigger, I said this thought of like, okay, be prepared. And I had this funny feeling she was going to make it. And sure enough, she did. But like I said, Minnie's one of the greatest putters I've ever seen. So her friend makes the putt to go even. And then Minnie makes the putt from 15 feet to win the tournament in front of the hometown crowd. It was pretty cool.
Nice.
That's exciting. What were your emotions like? Were you nervous with every swing of the club for her?
It was... that's another good question. And again, this is why I'm so passionate about mental coaching. What I had done it was actually like one of the easiest things. Like there, earlier that year too, we played a tournament in Sweden and she shot 63 in the final round to finish like third. And it was like a walk in the park. There was a little bit of nerves on that final hole, you know, making sure that we just made the right decision. You know, like you go back to the basics as a caddy of just, okay, double check the number, make sure you get the wind right, make sure you make the right decision, because that's what we can do. But I was very calm because I had 100% trust in my player.
You say you're really big into the mental coaching side of things. And like, so what are some examples that you would do out there, and like maybe something for the listeners to, you know, that you're doing with the tour players that they could potentially try in their own games?
Yeah. So the first thing is like, know what you're trying to do. Right? Like have a goal in mind, whether you're a 15 handicapper and you're just trying to get better, or you want to get better at putting, or, but like, and I love what Ronnie said about stats, like, and then when you're really serious about something, then you have to measure it. So and same thing at the tour level, be really clear about what what are your long-term goals? And then as caddies, that's what's then going to set us up to make sure that shot by shot, we're clear about all that stuff, right? Going through our checklist, assessing the lie, the yardage, the wind, where do we want this ball to be? And then just feeding our players good information so that they can be clear with what they're trying to do.
You're toying at my heartstrings here. I've got a golf coaching background, and I constantly saying, and on this podcast, like, yes, if you cannot measure it, then how can you make it better? There's just absolutely no metric, right? So really good information for the amateur golfers out there. So far we're taking, communication is really, really big when it comes down to caddying and just being an expert communicator. Is that something that would give somebody like yourself or a 12-year veteran, is that like how you get the longevity out there, is just having that ability to maybe admit you're wrong when you are wrong, not stepping over boundaries, and just, you know, being a good communicator, Andy?
Yeah, and I would say the trick to it is the being willing to admit when you're wrong. And the difficult thing is admitting when you're wrong, even when you're not wrong, because it's going to help your player calm down. Like, you need to, like, especially in the tournament, you got to do whatever you need to do to make sure that they're focused. And sometimes that means you just got to suck it up. And so it's really, and what's interesting, right, is as much as the mental game is mental, it's actually dealing with the emotional component. Because also you have to have the courage to be willing to step over the line for the sake of success, to stick your neck out. Like, I've had players where we're in a situation and I had a player one time that didn't like her pitching wedge for some reason. And we're in Hawaii on the 18th hole. And that hole is downhill, downwind. You got to fly your lie. It's whipping straight downwind, 20 miles an hour. And she's like, I want to hit an easy 9. And I'm like, no, you got to hit. First of all, full pitching wedge is plenty. And second of all, you'll have more spin with a full shot as opposed to an easy shot. Oh, I just really don't like full pitching wedge. I'm like, yeah, but it's the club. She's okay, I'll hit pitching wedge if you take 100% full responsibility for the outcome of this shot. I said, hit the 9-iron. Now, granted, she hits a smooth 9-iron. I think it stayed out of the back bunker, but it was on the back edge of the green and left herself a difficult 2-putt. But then later on that year, we were in a situation where the situation was easier. There was less of a downside, but I was like, hey, this is a pitching wedge. And she said, do you take 100% responsibility? I said, yeah, I trust you. Hit the shot. And she pulled it off. But that's all about dealing with those butterflies, right? And that trusting yourself as a caddy, you know, that being able to stay in the conversation, listen to what the player has to say, be able to listen to everything they have to say, and then be able to distinguish, okay, you're right. I did make a mistake. That's a clear-cut mistake. From, you know, because then too, it's like if they're going to razz you about something, you can always speak your piece after the round. You can always go back and say, hey, listen, we're a team. You said this thing, it seemed a little harsh. I mean, can we figure out how to have better communication out there? Because it just doesn't work for me the way.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you're like, you're out there. Like, yeah, I mean, you obviously your finances and stuff all rely on them doing, you know, the best that they can as well. Like, you know, you're not out there trying to ransack them. So there's, you know, obviously some instances where, you know, it's interesting when you get to those stages and it's like, you know, I don't think that's the right call, but they want to make the, you know, the hitting the nine iron as opposed to the pitching wedge. And at the end of the day, I guess they are the player, you know, you know, they're the one who gets the choice to make the shot. But, you know, just really, really cool to hear. 100%. Are you 100% sure? I would have done the exact same thing as you had. Yeah, hit the nine. Hit the nine. That's not on me, man.
Safety first, because there's water short of that green. You got to get it over the water. I was like,
that would have been a boss call. Just mic drop. Hit the P. I got this. 100%. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. You're in there.
Pitching wedge all day, bro.
What about when it comes to the flat stick? Do they call you in for some reads? Everybody's been wrong reading a putt here and there. Have you had to man up and say, sorry, I was wrong?
I've been really fortunate. So most of the players, like when I worked with Minnie, she was so good. I mean, I worked with her for a few years. She asked me maybe two times in the course of those few years for reads, which is nice. And I still say that you're better off finding a player that can putt and then working on the getting the ball on the green than the other way around. It just seems like coaching hasn't figured out how to really unlock. It is almost like putting is an instinctual thing. It's just such a fine-tuned thing. On the flip side, when I worked with Maria Ho, I read every putt for her. And I went and did the aim point. Like, I learned a lot about, and that helped a lot. Not so much of like, what that is, but it just gave us a common language so that it was like, listen, I'm going to read every putt for this speed and I'm going to read it. And then she knew, and then she would, that would give her the freedom to change the pace and the read a little bit. But I was lucky because she took responsibility. Like she never, she would give me feedback of like, I didn't hit my line or I hit it a little too hard, which was really helpful, but she never threw me under the bus, never gave me that like, way to go, that was a great read there, none of that crap, which is really nice. So I've been lucky that bullet.
I mean, I've coached golf for more than a decade at a high level. Putting is kind of subjective with line versus speed, and I've had both players. You know, I've bounced around a little bit, just, you know, lots of rookies, weak bags, nothing you know, necessarily permanent, until I got on with Jenny. But like, so having those players like you have, where you had to read every single putt, like what does that do for you on the golf? Like how much harder does that make your job as opposed to like having the player where, okay, maybe you just grab the flag and, you know, maybe study the green, you know, what's the difference there?
The difference, well, and again, the first thing I'll say, the reason why it worked with Uribe is that she knew her style. Like she knew how she read putts. She knew a lot of things that I think a lot of players don't even know, even at the tour level, about how her eye read putts. And so we were very much on the same page, and it did add more work, because a lot of that too was pre-Greens books, which I'm not a huge fan of Greens books. I do my work. I'm not going to chart a green, but I think you got to roll the ball. Like you got to put the ball on the ground and roll it. A greens book, there's, I almost feel like creating a program of like, cause just like you're going to read the green with your eyes and you're going to make some misreads, you can do the same thing looking in a greens book. So there was more work. It was it's a lot easier if you don't have to do any green work for a player.
Yeah, I think that they revamped the golf rules a year or two ago to make the game, you know, a little bit easier for amateurs, and to, you know, like the thing they took away that the caddy couldn't stand behind the player to aim them, which I think is a great rule, because if you're playing the game at the highest level, you should be able to aim yourself essentially. But then there's things, and I think it all boils down to just being it's another business outlet, those greens books, right? Because they charge whatever it is, $100 or $150 for them. And if you're telling me that somebody can't aim you from behind, but you can buy a book that tells you how to read the greens and that's not taken away from the game. So that one there to me just is like mind boggling, because I think it's just like one of the most intrinsic basic skills that you should have as a golfer, and especially one of the best golfers in the world.
Yeah, I agree. Like when we had those meetings a couple of years ago and the officials from the LPGA were sitting down and they were saying that the RNA wanted to take that away completely and said that green reading is one of the essential skills of playing golf. And I totally agree. And what's funny is at the professional level, if you suck at green reading, get a caddy that's good at it. Like you still have a way to find a loophole to a weakness in your game. But with the books, I mean, it's like, it's crazy.
And then again, that helps again, there's different, maybe, you know, there's a caddy who's good with the mental, there maybe there's a really good green reading caddy. So it actually opens up a whole different, you know, business side of things for guys like you and I, instead of the, not taking anything away from the people that do the greens books. They do a fantastic job. And another thing that I've noticed is, and I haven't been out there long, but all that was new to me, is that it slows up play substantially. Some of the players get their noses, and granted, some of them don't even really look at it. They look at it quickly to reference, but there's a few out there that get the noses going in there pretty substantially. 10 minutes later, you're like, tick, tick, yeah. Tick, tick. So, yeah. Well, are you caddying this year, Andy? I know you messaged me early on asking if I'd found a bag yet, but I know, why don't you tell us about you're really into the head game and stuff like that. And from what I understand, you're going down the life coach path. Yeah. I'm not sure if that's accurate at all. So why don't you get into that a little bit and tell us if you are planning to caddy, if we ever do go back.
Yeah. No, it is accurate. And I'm working on this side business. And I feel like anybody that's caddied on tour, you feel like a life coach. You're carrying the bag, you're getting the water, they're crying about their relationship, it's like you really have to be able to balance all these things. And so I was like, why don't I try that, you know? So I'm working on building the business. That's what I've been focused on COVID while I'm at home. And I have been talking to a player. So right now I'm still planning on going back out in July when it opens back up. I guess it's second or third week of July in Michigan. So that's the plan. And, you know, so it's really just how can I help people, whether it's coaching or caddying, you know, where can I be of service and help people get better at the game or enjoy life more? And, but right now the plan is you'll see me back out on tour.
When it comes to life coaching, are you wanting to coach the LPGA players, or is it widespread to anybody?
It's widespread to anybody. So, like what I've learned about the mental game and the things that hold people back, it's like it's obviously applicable when you're at the highest level, because all the players on tour can play, right? Like if you just look back, whether it's on the men's side, you've had Luke Donald is number one in the world. On the women's side, you have G.A. Shin. Both of those players, not long hitters, but they figured out how to crack the code. And then nowadays there is more of like the mental side and dealing with that. So I'm open to helping players with that side of the game. And then also too, bringing this aspect of knowing focusing on the communication with the caddy. Like I think that's one of my takes, is I think golf coaches, and there's a lot of great golf coaches out on the LPGA tour. And, you know, anytime you caddy, it's really nice when the coach asks you, what do you notice? What do you think could help this player? Because when you're out there 24/7, you see what the player doesn't see. So that's another thing I can bring to the table for players.
Well, I think life coaching, I'm a big proponent of life coaching, because all pro athletes, they have their posse, they have their managers, their coaches, just people behind the scene. But I think every Tom, Dick, and Harry should have some sort of coach, whether it's trying to interview for a job, somebody just pumping them up and telling them, hey, you know, go get that. You got this. Just on the layman's term, anybody should be able to have a life coach or a you know, an agent, so to speak, someone just to kind of help them down the street. So I give you props for doing that. I think that's a great line of work, and congratulations for going after it.
Thanks, Ronnie. I appreciate that, man. And I really get the sense of no wonder you have a passion for the game, and especially for caddying, because I've never met a caddy that doesn't have a heart for helping other people and thinking that that just makes sense. So I appreciate that.
Well, as you know, it's a bit of a, you know, and I'll just to touch on, you know, working with the coaches and stuff like there, and any of the, I mean, we're pretty in its infancy stages of this podcast, but some of the great players have really given shout outs to their caddies and just how important that relationship is. And just going back from my own personal experience, by the time I finished the season with Jenny, like, I mean, yeah, we're spending 6-7 days a week together, you know, 6 to 12 hour days. Like, if you're telling me you're not absolutely like a rock for this person, then I mean, you got another thing coming. And to be able to communicate, you know, if the a good coach should, you know, be asking the caddy in a non-threatening way about, like, you know, like, what, you know, this should be a team, you know, like our goal is to, you know, get that this person the best results as possible. And essentially I just had this conversation with my players, like, you know, like we're aligning, we should be aligning to achieve the same goal. Like, your win is my win, you know? So like, let's communicate, let's goal set together, and help each other through that process.
Yeah. And that's the other thing I try to tell the young guys, you know, anybody that's out there that wants to learn is, you know, as caddies, you're paid your salary to show up and do what, especially when you look at the history of the game, right? The old school, like, caddies just toted the bag. But nowadays, there's so much money. You got very intelligent people carrying those bags. Like, and not just in terms of their intelligence, but their golf IQ. Like, there's guys that, there was a guy that was, he's back on the PGA Tour, but he was caddying for Bronte Law. He finished 6th in the Buick on the PGA Tour. So it's like, yeah, so to have that relationship. And I love what you said, and I just realized too of like, that's the part where, too, caddies can speak up. And when the coach is there and say, hey, I've got some thoughts, like, would you be open to hearing what I have to say? Because I'm watching some different things. But, yeah, it's key.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead, Ronnie.
I was just going to say caddies are the unsung heroes out there. This weekend with the foursome of the guys, the TaylorMade Driver Relief, they had no caddies. The players were carrying their own bag, probably the first time since college. But a lot of talk on the radio today was about how bad their putting was because they didn't have a second set of eyes on there to help them out. A lot of the yardage, they were able to use range finders, but their shots were, I mean, they're a little rust on the club. Sure, they haven't picked it up in 65 days, but still, there was a lot of good sayings going around that the caddies, you know, they deserve a little bit more recognition when they are out there. The guys out there, they couldn't read putts and they were missing them right and left, and they had nobody to blame it on but themselves.
Don't let the caddy go anywhere. That's all I'm saying. But no, I have a little bit of, you know, you said a lot of smart people on the bag, and I am not a smart person at all. But, you know, I have a very deep background in coaching, you know, even won some awards with being a standout coach in Canada. And now I'm, you know, like just carrying the bag, advising, which I find to be so much more difficult than anything I've ever done coaching. You know, like, it's just like standing on the driving range for $150 an hour back home and just being like the man, and like them coming to you for all this like knowledge that you do have, but far, far, far more difficulty than, you know, carrying the bag, keeping up, keeping them positive, picking them up when they're down, controlling emotions, you know, like giving good advice under the gun. Like, it's for anybody who thinks it's a walk in the park, it's the hardest job I've ever had, let's put it that way, for a whole lot less credibility than, like, say, coaching, you know what I mean?
Well, and I love that you shared that side of it, because that's true. And like, I felt like the first 3 years of caddying on tour, it was just that, you know, like, because you do, just like when you're playing, you got to learn the fundamentals, right? How do you grip the club, stance, posture, and then you got to practice to really get it ingrained. I caddied at clubs, but tour caddying is different, like, because you're trying to measure all that stuff. And then the other thing I will say is, once you crack the code, or once you find that player where you have a great relationship and you really know what you're doing, then it flips, and then it's the easiest job in the world. Like, when they're on and your job is just, you know how to nudge them in the right direction and get them on, and then they play great and you just carry the bag and you cash checks. It's like,
that's helps to have that, a helps to have a player helps to have a player that's on. But yeah, no, overstepping on that, you know, again, I would, it's pretty tough for me to bite my tongue sometimes on the driving range, just having such a in-depth background on the golf swing. I'm just like, you know, sometimes I just got to be like, you're just here to carry the bag, pal, shut your mouth. But when the coach is in there, you know, I had no problem actually last year stepping in, and I got to be pretty good with the Team Sweden coaches are all out there helping all the girls, you know. So, again, it's just about communication, I think, for sure.
Yeah.
Casey, did you ever mention to your players that you were Coach of the Year and tell them that you've got game and you can help them? Did they ever come to you? Did they even know you were an accomplished coach?
Well, so, I mean, again, I was just fighting for work out there last year. I was just, I showed up in a camper van just trying to caddy on the LPGA Tour. That's a whole nother segment in itself. But for instance, this year with Kelly in Australia, when we started to get to know each other, I did. I said, you know what? I said, Kelly, I've won 15 professional tournaments. Okay. And on a club level, the BC PGA, all that sort of stuff, not any huge tour or anything, but I said, I'm not saying that because I don't want a pat on the back. I don't want a congratulations. I just want you to know that I know what it takes. I know what you need to put into it. I know the sacrifice, and I know what you need to do in order to get down the stretch, put yourself into position, and actually get the job done. So that was, you know, and I certainly try to, like, not from any egotistical way or like trying to hear this is what I've done, but just like, I think it's really helpful in knowing, like, okay, this guy might have some experience and know what he's talking about. And I said it in a way with those examples of being like, this is why I can help you, so to speak, you know, like, it's your resume to some degree.
Yeah, even though I think that's great you did that, Casey. And I think when it comes to communication and when it comes to relationship and getting to know people, sharing of accomplishments is so difficult because people are afraid to come off as braggy or overconfident or arrogant, right? And that's where it's all about the energetics. It's all about just making sure you're on the same level. And it's like, hey, I know what your accomplishments are. Just so you know, here's my resume. Here's the things I've done, and not sharing from a bragger. But also too, to like develop that trust, because you want that player to be like, I got the best caddy on my back. Like, this guy knows what he's doing. He's got my back inside and out. He knows the game fundamentally. He knows the game as a player. Like, it goes a long way. So that's awesome that you did that.
Oh, and I'm a communicator like you, you know, again, I've had a life of communicating. So another thing I said, and we haven't actually done it yet. I mean, we only work 2 weeks in Australia, but you know, we're chatting on the phone once a week anyways. Like, when we get back on tour, let's sit down and let's goal set. Like, I want to know your goals. And you know what? I'm going to tell you mine as well. Cause you know, I don't just have the bag on here. I got a podcast. I got shit I want to accomplish as well. Right. So, but I think that's really important. We've come back to communication again, and just to be aligned. So any of those aspiring caddies out there, a trend from this podcast is to be a good communicator. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I learned that from other guys. Like, I started by just walking the course, just like you and I met. You walk the course, you start talking to the other caddies, right? Rule number one of being a great caddy for a great player.
Yeah. Did you get under any mentorship out there from any of the other caddies, or like, how did you hone your craft out there, Andy?
It came mostly from, like, I'm a pretty like friendly with every person kind of person. Right. So there was a couple guys I want to give a shout out to. It was Rob Hart. I don't know. He was married to Marcy Hart that used to play on tour, and we were in Orlando at a tournament. He was caddying for Sophie Gustafson at the time. and we were out on the putting green or chipping green. And he went out of his way to walk across the green and come over to me and introduce himself and say, "Hey, I see that you're new out here, but I see you've been out for a while. Here's my phone number. If you got any questions or you need help with anything, feel free to reach out." And that went such a long way for me. Like, that helped so much in terms of realizing, yeah, like, as much as we're out there to compete against one another, it's also like a little family, right? And so then I started, you know, as I was walking the course, I would ask T-Mac, Annika's caddy at the time, when he's walking the course, you know, just pick his brain a little bit. And that's what I tell the young guys, especially when you're getting started. It's like, yeah, maybe try to offer something, ask somebody out, say, "Hey, can I go buy you a beer and just pick your brain, or let's go get some wings or something." But it's amazing. I found everybody to be quite nice. And so nobody in particular took me under their wing. And then just different guys I would stay with from time to time, that as we stayed together, we'd just get to know each other, and they would we'd share stories, and it was really great.
I'm a big believer in mentorship, and I have definitely a good question asker out there. Last year, even though with my coaching background, I didn't have a caddy background, and there's a whole new set of skill set to learn out there. So continuing to go on the coaching thing a little bit and the caddy thing, is fear an issue out there? Like, especially with your life coaching, I'm really big into this sort of stuff as well. And just like, you know, for example, starting this podcast with Ronnie, there's an element of fear. So like, what do you have to say to the listeners about, transcending that, and things that you would maybe do with, do you notice fear on the golf course with your players? Like, especially like, "Oh, I can't carry or there's water left. I should maybe play a little too conservative," you know, like,
So that's a great question, because I think fear is the thing. I think fear is what so much of life boils down to in performance. And so what I would say about fear, and this goes also, it's the conversation about confidence, right? Like, what is confidence? Because one could say that a confidence is a lack of fear, right? Like, they're kind of on the same spectrum. So the thing I would share with people is like, journal, like write down what are the situations, like from a golf perspective, what are the situations that weaknesses in your game that, you know, if there's a certain club, if there's a certain situation, like you said, with water, could be bunkers, right? A lot of amateurs struggle with bunker play. But even at the tour level, like if you're caddying for somebody, you want to find out what their weaknesses are, because fear shows up where you're weak. It doesn't show up where you're strong. Confidence shows up where you're strong. So like you said, when you're starting something new, expect fear. So journal, get clear for yourself, you know, where does it show up? And then the next thing is, how does your body respond? Like, for you, what is it about fear, and where do you experience tension, and where do you feel it, and what happens with your breathing, and what happens, like, what part of your body gets stiff, or do you swing the club too fast, or do you tend to start looking in the green book too much? But that's a sign that you're indecisive, right? Indecision is a symptom of fear. When you're clear what you're doing, there's like, right, when you're working for one of those players, it's like they have no fear. It doesn't matter what's on the golf course or where the pin is, they're firing at it. And then as a caddy, you need to know for yourself, okay, now I need to, like, we need to hit away from this flag, because percentage wise, it just makes no sense. but yeah, like, in like, get comfortable. Like, that was really the key for me too, of like, with the mental side of the game, is like, yeah, look at your thoughts, but then too, how do you feel in your body, right? And then, you know, going back to the golf swing, because it's like, you know, as a player and as a coach, but too, this will resonate to anybody that's watching this. We say all this stuff, right? Keep your head down, have good tempo. But all that stuff is reliant upon your body, and your body being in a state where it's actually able to do what it knows how to do. And when you're experiencing fear and you're tense, so you know, that's the other thing is you can practice with fear in mind, like try to create situations that stir that up. And so that way, when you're coming down the stretch, you already know because you've already dealt with it. But if you only ever practice in a bubble when there's no pressure on, and now all of a sudden you're coming down the stretch trying to win a tournament and you get flustered because your body's doing all this weird stuff that you're not accustomed to, that's for sure going to take you down.
That's about as good an answer as I could have ever hoped for. I'm just stoked on the well of the depth of knowledge that we're getting from you, Andy, and can't wait to grab your handles at the end of this for our listeners. And just to reiterate, the fear shows up when you're weak, and to listen to your body, a really, really great insight. So I mean, I'm getting pretty close. We're super cognizant of your time here. I don't know what Ronnie's got on his end there, but you know, just with that segue, is there a belief, a behavior, or a habit as a life coach, as a tour caddy, mental coach that has like improved your life in the last 5 years?
Yeah. So the big one for me is meditation. I've had a on again, off again relationship with meditation. I actually learned from the two coaches. I learned some breathing stuff back in the day. And one of my favorite quotes is, "What's easy to do is easy not to do." Right? So meditation, all you got to do is sit in a chair. Pick a certain amount of time, sit in a chair. But how many people meditate? Not that many. And that too is because that seems to be the gateway of like taking that time to look at your thoughts, to look at your body, to notice your self-talk, to notice the beliefs that tend to show up in the mental world. And you can shortcut that. I would say do that practice. It'll help you no matter what. And if you want to shortcut it, just hire a coach, because then a person could come in and tell you all the shit you're doing wrong.
Hire Andy. What's easy to do is easy not to do. And I'll just back that up. I just did a 21-day meditation with Andy online there, and it was a lot of accountability and really good. And that continues to come up on the podcast with all the elite players, especially like Gabby Lopez and Christina Kim. So awesome to see certain trends of people who are high achievers of what they do, and just little life hacks that people can continue to take out of this podcast and incorporate it into their routines in life. Ronnie, how you doing over there, brother?
Oh, I'm doing real good, entertained by Andy's thoughts and everything. I'm just kind of wondering what the future has for you, Andy. It looks like you're kind of leaning more towards the life coaching than looping.
You got it, Ronnie. I want to help golfers, but I just got to this point where I'm like, I think I can help more people. I love caddying, but you can only help one person at a time as a caddy. Versus coaching, I can work with more people for little fits and spurts. So
the beautiful thing about the internet is you can continue to help your player, and you can continue to help people online. And we're so fortunate about that. Hopefully we can shuffle this out to as many people on the web as well. And that being said, like, where can the listeners find you, Andy, if they want to get a hold of you, if they want to talk about coaching and any of that sort of stuff?
Yeah, coaching golf, whatever the topic. I love talking about all sorts of stuff. The main two places are my personal page on Facebook, which is Andrew Techmeyer. And then my Instagram, which is at Andy Techmeyer, all one word. Those are the two main hubs that it's easiest to reach out.
Well, you've got a new fan and a new friend in me. I'm going to look you up and start following you a little bit. I like what you have to say, and you got a lot on the ball, and it's really nice to have you on our Let's Talk Divots podcast. We appreciate you coming on.
Ronnie, I appreciate that so much, man. Yeah, and if there's anything I can do to help what you're up to with this podcast or catting or anything,
Definitely going to reach out to you. There's no doubt about it, because I'm into life coaching myself. I love helping everybody from anybody and anybody. If I can offer some sort of help, I'm willing to do it. I just love to make the human race a better place.
Awesome. No better time than what we're going through right now, too. So
that's right.
Thanks for coming on, Andy. Appreciate it, man.
Casey, I appreciate you so much, man. I love what you're doing. I love that the players are coming on here. You ask great questions. It's fun. I know there's a lot of golf fans that want to see behind the curtain of what we do, what players do on tour. So I support you fully.
Speaking of behind the curtain, one last thing. Can you give us a little wow story about something as a caddy, maybe with a fan interaction you might have had with somebody calling out, maybe heckling your player, or just seeing a hole-in-one, double eagle, holing out? Give us something good to leave us on.
The first thing that popped into my mind, it was the first U.S. Open I'd ever caddied. When I said earlier that on again, off again, we were at the LPGA Championship. It was the McDonald's Championship back then. And I learned a lot that day through failure. It was horrible. And then she was going to fire me. And then the next day had the 36 hole US Open qualifier. And she's like, "You don't have to caddy for me. That's okay." And I'm like, "I'm going to caddy for you. Like, even if you're not going to take me beyond here, I'm not going to leave you high and dry. Even if you go to the US Open, don't take me." Plays 36 hole qualifier, plays great. Gets in, she's happy. She's like, "You can come to the U.S. Open." So we go out to Rhode Island. We're paired with Becky Iverson. Becky was like, actually had a really solid game and I think had a pretty solid career as a tour professional, but was not one of the big name players. And Friday afternoon, we're coming in. It's the ninth hole at, I don't remember the name of the course. It was in Rhode Island. And they had this wicked green that was hardcore left to right. And then it went down on the left-hand side and the pin was tucked like three from the left edge. So if you miss left, you have an impossible chip. If you hit this ball further than a yard to 2 yards right of the flag, it's going to trickle down 30, 40 feet. And you're hitting a hybrid in. And Becky Iverson hits this hybrid in the hole for eagle. And we're like 200 yards away, and there's a small grandstand of people, and they cheered, and I could feel the wave of excitement. And I was like, "Oh my God, this is the coolest thing." Like the fact that you get to be inside the ropes with these players at the US Open and see this kind of stuff firsthand is really, really cool.
So much easier than putting, hey? Just put it in.
Right? That's the trick. Just hit it in the jar from the get-go.
Love it, man. Thanks so much, brother. And shout out to you. And we'll be in touch very, very soon.
What a great episode that was. Thanks so much for tuning in. We are once again at Let's Talk Divots on all social media platforms. If you can go ahead, give us a like, a share, a comment. We'd appreciate it and look forward to bringing you another great guest next week.